and it is 8:03. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. And this morning, do you get freaked out about immigration? Does it upset you that there's people around you that are talking languages that you don't understand? And on the other hand, do you love immigration? Do you love cultures? Do you ever sit around and think about how to build bridges between yourself and the people next to you who might be from someplace very, very far away? So this morning, our guest is Patrick Engstrom-Poor.
Hi. Hi, Lisa. Good to be back.
Excellent. Patrick, longtime KBOO programmer. He's been working on his new company, People, Places, Things, LLC, mm-hmm. where it's more than just language learning. It's culture learning, cultural exploratory, putting Anglo people next to people from far away. I think it sounds fascinating. Patrick came up with this idea, too, after traveling for a long, long time mm-hmm. through Latin America doing a special radio documentary project. So, Patrick, first of all, talk about what is People, Places, Things, LLC?
Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, it's fun to be back here at the station. I hope everything's going well here. So, it's a little difficult to talk about what I do. It's a lot easier for people to see it, which is sort of a theme that runs through almost everything that we're doing. There's an explanatory force in dominant mainstream America that sometimes doesn't get at things that just need to be experienced, and that's really true of the work that we're doing. But before going into that, we haven't developed the language yet for how to connect cross-culturally in our communities. So there's a lot of concepts that I'm going to bring up. I'm going to do a lot of defining as we talk through stuff, just to make sure that it's clear where we're at. My website's www.pptpdx.com, the People, Places, Things, PDX. I think the easiest way for people to understand exactly where we're going and what our business model is training English speakers how to teach English to non-English speakers, not just Spanish speakers, but anybody mm-hmm. that doesn't speak English, here in the United States, in our communities, in a culturally appropriate way. I've been teaching English since 1996. I got my TESOL certificate, Teaching English as a Second Language certificate from PSU, Department of Applied Linguistics, back in 96. And since then, I've done a lot. I've taught thousands of classes outside the U.S. and inside the U.S., and one thing that emerged for me was was that it seemed like a lot of people that I knew who didn't speak English were desperate, well, said they were desperate, were really wanting to learn English, but didn't. But for some reason, it wasn't working for them. The a PCC or the private
sit in a classroom, sit in a chair, listen to someone go. The man is muy.
Yeah, right.
Stuff like
to put a finer point on it, the structural approach, the explanatory approach to language learning wasn't working for them. Explaining how English looks, what its structure is, to somebody who may not have explored the structure of their own language is like adding a more complicated explanatory structure on top of one that's already complicated enough. Let me get a little more specific. I gave a presentation along with Regina over at PSU at the OR-TESOL conference every year. There's a Teaching English Speakers of Other Languages conference here in town, somewhere in Oregon. I did a workshop called You and I Are Not Pronouns. the idea being that language learning itself is much better done with real contextualized language rather than explaining that, okay, you is a word, which is a pronoun, which is second person, singular, as if we are going to remember all the explanation about
it. Conjunction is and stuff like that.
Any better than I can just go, you, if I was saying in Spanish, tú y yo, it's easier than saying, tú es una palabra que significa una persona. No, it's not necessary to do that. So that's a little bit about our approach. There are other things that we're doing. We're putting in culturally responsible English classes in sites. So we work with nonprofits like Metropolitan Family Service, Hacienda CDC, VOS, the Day Labor Center, Impact Northwest, ERCO, Los Niños Cuentan. We put in culturally responsible English classes mostly for parents. A lot of these are in schools in low-income neighborhoods that have a high number of English language learners. And yeah, we put these programs in and people like them. And yeah, anyway, there's a lot more.
This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're in the studio, live in the studio with Patrick, and we're talking about his new company, People Places Things. And what I really want to dig into today is there's so much racism in this country. And there's so much racism around immigration and immigrants. I just interviewed this wonderful woman from the African Women's Coalition, where they have taken on basically a community health issues research project that they just completed. What are the top three priorities for the African immigrant and refugee communities here in Portland? One of the things that they discovered, well, that they realized like a few years ago when they first formed, was that a lot of people in schools didn't realize that there was a difference between African and African American students. And, you know, when we talk about immigrant communities, and we do talk about how there's a perceived lack of racial diversity here in Portland and in Oregon, actually, there's a lot of diversity. What we see is that we have neighbors, friends, family members coming from all over the world to Oregon, and people get isolated. It's the real isolation of those communities. And Patrick, I want you to talk a little bit about what difference does it make to us as we just walk down the street, or we're, you know, somebody's going to be tuning into some Glenn Beck special now talking about the evils of immigration, probably. Mm-hmm. What difference does it make if we look at these issues of how we learn language, and what are you doing that's even beyond language?
Yeah, that's a great question. We'll hit that, I think, a little bit later. I wanted to bring up that what you just said about the differences in the schools between African Americans and Africans. I mean, this is a big deal, particularly for African immigrants who, for whatever sort of problematic reasons, want to be distinct or not, want to be distinguished from, you know, African Americans. So there's that there. But I was at Cesar Chavez Elementary, which is in St. John's, and I went in there to set up a new program. And there was a Somali woman behind the counter. I have an interesting story about cross-cultural contact and creating a problem and dealing with those issues in a safe way. So I saw her and I was like, oh, I want to talk to you. Cool. Who are you? And she said, I'm the parent liaison. There's a lot of Somalis here. That school has, I think, over 50% Spanish speaking children, students there. So that means there's going to be a lot of Spanish speaking parents very likely as well. But I was like, oh, there's Somalis here as well. So I stuck out my hand to shake her hand and she gave me her elbow. And I was like, what? I don't understand what is going on here. And then I realized, oh, this particular Muslim woman doesn't shake hands with men. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, okay, yeah, that's how that goes here. Anyway, so we continued our conversation and I said, what percentage of parents are likely to be non-English speakers here? And she said, oh, she asked somebody to go get her the demographics, and they gave me a demographic sheet that showed me the number of African Americans. And that included African immigrants and African Americans. And so, you know, for me, for very important purpose, I was not able to distinguish what percentage of English language learners would be in that school. It's important, actually.
It's hugely important because the issues that face immigrant African communities and African American communities are starkly different.
Yeah.
And in Portland, we see that African
although the racism
kids,
is very similar.
I was going to say, there are some things that are the same, but sometimes African people and African American people don't get along and they eye each other with distrust. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. Have you had a cross-cultural experience? What is your take on how do you learn how to get along with people that maybe in your neighborhood are from the other side of the world? Maybe you're from the other side of the world. What do you need when you walk down the street in this town? What do you wish white people knew? And we do have a caller. We have George on the line. George, what do you think?
Deport.
Okay.
Awesome.
Was that the Go Ducks Go guy? That's such a hoot. Go Ducks Go. He waited a long time.
Yeah.
How would you say Go Ducks Go?
Let's see. Váyase, patos, váyase.
Right on.
Maybe. That means get out of here, actually, so that's probably not exactly right. Andale.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. We're talking about cross-cultural bridge building. We're live in the studio with Patrick, his new company, People Places Things LLC. Have you had a breakthrough in understanding or building a bridge with someone in your community that's from someplace far away? Or are you transplanted here in Portland from someplace far away? And what do you need from the people around you? The number to call is 503-231-8187. And Patrick, I wanted to ask you something. When you set up People Places Things LLC, mm-hmm. you decided to do it as a company as opposed to a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you do, though, is you work with other, I feel like you work with other nonprofits and even government agencies to support what they do. You're not just creating some freestanding zone mm-hmm. that's out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to make it a business, and how do you work with these other entities?
Also a great question. As I mentioned, one business model is teaching English speakers how to teach English in a better way, or in a way that works for community settings. There's a lot of important work being done in the institutional settings like PCC, private language schools. But we needed something that was going to work for folks, for their families, where there already were 120 at least 120 community-based language sites that were taught mostly by volunteers. They're mostly free all over the wider region, and I wanted to provide support to them. So there's that part of the business model. But the other part is that nonprofits who are working with an increasingly diverse, language-diverse population or work specifically with communities who have language needs, we're not having that much success. I mean, they tend to focus on building the bridge in one direction. They want to make sure that you filled out your paperwork correctly so you can get that benefit, or you come to the parent-teacher meeting, any very specific thing that helps them connect with the mainstream society. But most of those things were not focused on language, because language takes a long time, and Americans and American culture doesn't really understand how languages are learned. This is my opinion, my sort of professional opinion.
You mean United States, like North? Actually, I don't even know if I would include Canada in that. Do you think United States specifically, people in Central America, South America, do they have a better sense about it?
You've been
to all these places.
Yeah. I would say this is my experience, and I'd love to hear from any language teachers, any language professionals out there, and discuss some of them, because I think there's a lot of things to talk about. But I would say that Americans in particular, because of the cultural dominance or the world global dominance of English and the sort of supremacy of the United States, cultural power, whatever that means, there's been less of a need or less of a desire, broadly speaking, in this idea of America that looks like sort of a white guy from Texas. You know, that's not really what America looks like, so that's problematic from the very beginning. Folks outside the U.S. believe that they should learn English. You know, I mean, even if they don't have plans to come here, they think that it will give them money at some point. Many Americans who already speak English just don't think they need to. So folks who do come here, there's a lot of misunderstandings about learning a language, and it really comes down to this explanatory versus practical model, skills versus knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I think the skills versus knowledge thing is just, there's so many things to pull out that I feel like I'm digging into all the time. Skills should not be explained. They should be practiced. And it's that simple. But our society is a knowledge-based society. So everyone thinks, I should sit in a classroom, like you said a little while ago, and someone will explain to me English, and then I'll know out. They can explain Kung Fu as it happens in The Matrix. You know, Keanu Reeves is like, I know Kung Fu, as if the muscles in your body wouldn't need to be trained so that you could do Kung Fu. Like, it's not a knowledge. It's a skill.
Wait, we do have a caller. Let's go up to the phone. We have Paul on the phone. Paul, what's going on?
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I was wondering, do you have a volunteer program that someone like myself can come in and learn? Because I unfortunately didn't pay too much attention in school 30, 40 years ago. And my English isn't very well, but I love the culture of any country. Anytime I run into someone from a different country, I'm just so fascinated and interested in, and you know, their background. But you know, for me to even have a communication with you know, someone who's really educated here in America with the English language, I'm going back to your statements from before, a little back there that you said that about nouns and all that stuff. I didn't pay attention to that. So
yeah, you sound like you speak English well to me.
Well, I try, and I mean, KBOO's helped me just by listening, but I've listened so long, I've picked it up from learning. But, you know, my question is there some place that, or do you have a program where I could come in maybe once or twice a week and get some training and be able to go out and help some other people speak my language?
Yes, Paul, yes.
Thanks a lot for calling, Paul. Paul's bringing up cool things. Thanks for calling, Paul.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, it is a business. We're trying to figure out a way to make this sustainable. And I'll get back to the question of what I'm doing for the social service agencies in just a minute. But I can't take volunteers, but we work with nonprofits. So there's a way for people to be involved if they just want to be in the classroom as what we call classroom assistants. It's a very active role. It's not just sitting there watching. You're doing stuff all the time. So if you go to the website, www.pptpdx.com, and take a peek at what's there, send me an email and say, hey, I don't really want to teach right now, but I'd like to just see what your program is about. We've totally set it up so that you can explore it and go to many of the sites, interact with the people, see what it's like. And a lot of times when people do that, they get excited about what it feels like to be in a room of people that you can't actually talk to, but like the energy's there and everyone's communicating anyway. Yes, they're communicating without actually talking to each other. And it comes down to good facilitation is what it is.
You know, it strikes me about what Paul said. First of all, one of the things that's kind of like the elephant in the room that people don't talk about when it comes to education is that students learn as much from each other as they learn from a teacher.
Totally.
Right? And when you're talking about language learning and cultural learning, one of the reasons that so many young people are encouraged to take language in school is because it makes you learn your own language better. Yeah. At least in this country, it does. And my daughter's been studying Japanese for 4 years, and the things that she comes up with just crack me up. Yeah. I mean, it's just fascinating. It is a great way to learn more about you when you go and sit next to people from far away.
Oh, my gosh.
But, Patrick, one of the things that strikes me when we're talking about people, places, things, LLC. We're talking about Patrick's company where he helps people. I feel as though you work with nonprofit groups to give people a better model for how to learn language and culture from each other. It's more than just learning language. It's also learning about how to be next to each other. Even though this country is so racist, one of the things, and it's so anti-immigrant, really, but one of the things that I often hear from people, even people who self-identify as Tea Partiers and stuff like that, is that people do have a fascination and a desire to reach out to people who don't speak their language or who are not from where they are from. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I look at the whole racism piece and I look at the whole Arizona-style attacks on immigration in general, I feel as though it's a manipulation, because I think at our heart, just people in general want to embrace the people that are next to them that seem odd. And when you look
at... It's kind of human, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of human. I mean, you know, love will out, too. Yeah. I have to say that. You know, when you look around, especially Portland, people fall in love across cultural lines, across racial lines every day. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about, so Paul wants to know, how can he plug in?
Yeah.
Now you work with different groups. What do the groups do?
Just to finish up the piece in case I wasn't clear about plugging in. I'm one of the reasons I wanted to be on today is to let people, one of the groups that I'd really like to reach the most are folks over 50 who are looking about a career change or thinking about retiring. There's a lot of talk about how boomers are, you know, there's a glut of boomers and they don't have work to do and they're feeling left out and they're aging. And I think that I've got an opportunity for the boomers with some time on their hands, if that's the case, to help become the cultural workers, to be extending the hands to an increasingly diverse America through language learning. The trick is we do teach people how to be next to each other, but we don't actually tell them that's what we're doing. The funny thing is if you call a diversity meeting in Boyce Elliott or something, nobody's going to come to that, especially not people of color, generally speaking. A diversity meeting, it's a bunch of, you know, sort of white ladies sitting around inviting me to talk
about
my...
It's code. It's white people's code.
Totally white people's code, yeah.
We do have a caller, but let's go to Tom really quick. Tom, what do you think?
Go Ducks, go!
Okay.
That's awesome.
All right. He's learning how to get next to people. But anyway, so we're live in the studio with Patrick. It's Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. Patrick, his new company is People Places Things LLC, bridges the ethnic, linguistic, and cultural differences in our communities, talking about a different way to learn language and learn culture. And so we're just giggling kind of about the white people. You know, we have our own code and our own language, and we, because of the whole cultural hegemony thing, we don't even have to perceive it, go Ducks, go, and all that.
We don't even have to perceive it, exactly.
So but Patrick, you work with the nonprofit groups, and you, instead of calling a diversity meeting, talk more about it.
Instead of calling a diversity meeting, it seems like even in the United States, most people will get this thing. Hey, you want to learn Spanish? I'm going to introduce you to some Spanish speakers, and we're going to hang out every Tuesday night, and we're going to practice together. So most people who have decided that they want to learn another language don't bristle at the idea of actually being in the same room with the people who speak the language they want to learn. So this is, in my opinion, don't tell anyone outside of a KBOO listenership, but it's kind of my stealth anti-racism thing, because once people get in the room and we facilitate them interacting with each other, then the humanization happens. But I don't tell them, and you're going to work on your racism issues. It doesn't work like that. That's not how you do it. I've discovered, after spending 15 years telling people that I was working on my racism issues and they should too. Just a technical thing, when I'm using the word racism, there's lots of good definitions of what that word means. I mean the unanalyzed privilege, mostly of white folks, but not always, but mostly. So really, for me, what anti-racism work means is creating a humanizing space where people from different backgrounds can look into each other's eyes and watch each other's mouths move. And through that process, it's not the first day. The first day is weird, kind of, although I make it fun. The second, third, fourth, 10th day, we actually have an excuse to get people coming to the same room together for 15 weeks. You can't do that in a diversity meeting because everybody thinks, oh, great, I heard from them and they told me about their struggle. And again, explanatory mode, not experiential. I go home and I go back and my life's the same. But once somebody decides that they want to come into the room over and over again, they must be transformed. People, I got this from Becky Chow when we were in Woodburn at a KPCN like anniversary thing. And this sentence popped out of her mouth. Becky Chow, I don't know if she's still on the board or not, but she said, people change when they meet other people. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. And if there was a moment when things crystallized for me and changed my direction in life, this 15 years of teaching English and trying to figure out, all of my political values came together in that one sentence. People change when they meet other people. And I say, give me Sarah Palin and give me 10 weeks with her in a room with the immigrants that she is excoriating, and she will be a different person.
It's Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Patrick. He's the owner of a new company, People Places Things LLC. He works with people who teach English to non-English speakers, helps recreate that model of how people learn and the directions that learning takes place.
Yeah.
It's kind of squishy when I say it like that.
I know, and yet, it's hard to talk about, but it's easy to see when you're there.
Yeah, I think that when we spend a little time traveling, that's something that can happen. It doesn't always. And we do have a caller. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Have you had a cross-cultural experience? What worked for you? And we have Ralph on the phone. Ralph, what do you think?
Hi. My daughter is a teacher in Hillsboro, and so I've been helping her as a volunteer.
Nice.
And so my question was, how do you connect with the schools? To me, it's been an amazing experience to see, first, the diversity of the kids there, and then their interest in language, and also the need for help in any number of ways. So that's my question was, how do you get into the schools where there is a need?
Ralph, thanks a lot. That's a great question. It goes back to the elusive question of how I'm working with nonprofits, which I can't seem to actually get the answer to, but we'll get there eventually. One of the ways that we work with nonprofits is there are Sun Schools in Multnomah County. Sun Schools, Uniting Neighborhoods, are a little extra money from the county. I don't know if it's fully county anymore. I think it's kind of gotten bigger than that. But there are about 50, 60 of them. And in low-income neighborhoods, after-school programs really try to make these schools community centers. centers so that parents can get more engaged with the school, so that kids have something to do after school, and it's an enrichment thing. And I think the program is really interesting. Outside of Multnomah County, when Metropolitan Family Services runs it, it's called CAFE program in some schools that we work in, Oak Grove Elementary. And in Washington County, the SHINE program, I think, is Impact Northwest version. But anyway, so they already have to do parent engagement. It's part of their mission. And one of the things that's interesting about what we're doing, just in the same way that I was just talking with you, Lisa, about how we get people in the room together for a long period of time and then they become transformed. Well, a lot of these organizations that weren't culturally specific in the first place were having difficulty engaging with non-native English speaking populations. They didn't know how to get them to the PTA meeting. They didn't know how to get them to come even show up to meet with the teacher. You know, they sent out a notice and it was in their language, but it still didn't work. Like, don't these people understand? That kind of feeling was coming out of the system, right? So with the ESL classes, though, almost everybody who doesn't speak English, in great part immigrants and refugees, once they know that's happening, that for them is a great way to get them, they want to come. So our job, once they come, is to keep them coming back by using dynamic techniques and authentic materials and keeping everybody engaged in the classroom setting. So what we've actually kind of stumbled on is a way to bring parents of immigrants immigrant refugee parents, often, or ELL, English language learning parents. They come into the school sometimes more often than the English-speaking ones do because they have a reason to come there Tuesday and Thursday nights from 6 to 7:30, and they're building community and they're getting contact with English speakers. So that's one of the nice little secret things that we've done. And we're, my goal is there's so many things. One of my goals is to get as many programs running in Sun schools and schools like them as possible. We offer them for free to the social service organizations that we work with. So the programs themselves don't cost them any money other than the space. The way it works is that the people who want to learn how to teach are paying me to get a certification. It's 50 classes, 50 classroom experiences where I guide you and you're in a community of other teachers who are engaging in this process. We can talk a little bit more about that later. But so it's in a way, if you do want this skill, like you think you want to teach outside the U.S., if you want to teach outside the U.S. Or teach in the U.S., you can sort of pay me to give you skills to support these programs in low-income neighborhoods and connect with diversity inside the school system, which brings parents into closer contact with their kids' learning, which we all know improves school outcomes, that kind of thing. Hope that helps, Ralph.
Okay, and we do have another caller. We have James on the phone. James, what do you think?
Deport.
Yeah. Whatever. Those folks are out there, so.
All right. It's Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. Have you had a cross-cultural experience that you think is remarkable or that changed you? Are you someone who has wanted to learn another language but not been very successful with it? What do you think about that? The number to call is 503-231-8187. We're in the studio with Patrick. We're talking about People, Places, Things. It's a culture and language bridge service company. Actually, it looks like there's a lot of things going on with People, Places, Things. But, I want to back up a little bit and look at some of the issues that touch on what you're trying to address. Mm-hmm. First of all, I love it when people set up a small business, which mm-hmm. is you. I'm just assuming it's just you.
I am the owner of the business.
Right. Yeah. People who sit around and they go, okay, I'm going to set up a small business to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
What were the steps in you deciding to do that?
Great question. So my original favorite plan a couple of years ago, I quit my job at Clackamas County Health Department, and I've been trying to think about how I would develop a language school for a really long time. Having been a community-based English teacher, I saw there was no money and no apparent value in this, though tons of immigrants and refugees were there. So I'm like, I'm going to make this. And all these unsupported volunteers teaching English, not that well, they're frustrated as well as their students oftentimes. So my hope was to find a friendly nonprofit who would see what I was bringing and want to kind of let me come in and write grants for them to fund my own position and support their organization. That's what I had hoped to do. And I spent a couple of years stumping. stumping around to see if someone would let me work with them. Couldn't really find anyone who would do it. I didn't want to set up my own nonprofit because to get your own nonprofit, I mean, this whole thing is so strange that a lot of nonprofits who even work with these communities, they're like, why do we need a method for teaching English? Don't you just come in there and just tell people how to speak English? You know, that kind of thing. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but again, there's a not very many people see how to train people until you're actually, oh, this is what training looks like. So I couldn't set up a board. It would, and business is a lot more flexible. And I start changing my thinking and saying, you know, I believe that connecting cross-culturally is valuable. It's economically viable. Once we connect people up, money and social capital, whatever that is, will start growing. And that's my total faith, you know? And I am getting a little money in now, so thanks for the organizations that are supporting us.
All right, and we do have a caller. We have Brian on the phone. We have legitimate Brian. Brian, what's going on? What do you think?
I do try and be legitimate.
To the degree, you know.
I do know who my mother was, and I'm not a Ducks fan. good on you. I'd like to, I know it's, you know, we're limited for time on the phone here, but I would like to, I live at the coast where there's a lot of Latino farm laborers and, you know, dishwashers and cooks that, you know, and a lot of them barely speak English. So I spend quite a bit of my time speaking Spanish to them just because it's easier for them. But I do try and encourage them to speak English too. But I would, you know, one of my problems is I speak Castellano, you know, with a cerveza, and stuff, you know, and sometimes that, you know, plus my accent is no picnic for them either. You know, some of the yokels at the coast here that are white don't understand me sometimes.
Yeah.
But a couple of questions. How does your, I'd like to get your business model, and if you could give out an email, you know, I don't want you, if you could leave it with.
We have a listserv, so if you have access to a computer, pptpdx.com, sign up for my listserv, and we explain the business model on there. PPT for people, places, things. PPTPDX.
PDX.com. Okay. Mm-hmm. One other thing. How does it differ? My late ex-wife used to teach English as a second language and to Chinese, but how does your method compare with that method? I mean, she didn't speak Chinese or Spanish or anything, but it seemed that was an advantage, the way I understood it. So she just went and, she just took these Chinese people around and spoke to them and explained things to them.
Yeah, good question.
Got some great Chinese moves out of it, too.
Thanks, Brian.
So
thanks
anyway,
for calling.
I'd like to hear some more about this. It's a great idea.
All right, thanks.
So we have a model, a curriculum approach that I call the Voz Alta method. Voz Alta means loud voice or out loud in Spanish, but it doesn't... I just put it in Spanish because I liked it. It works with any cultural background. And the Voz Alta approach is a popular education approach. It's in line with second language acquisition theory right now that says really that de-emphasizes grammar, that works on, it's called the natural language approach, popularized by Stephen Krashen. And it's kind of the dominant theory right now about it, even though a lot of teachers aren't really using that because we come out of these knowledge-based institutions even with all these theories about how we shouldn't use, you know, knowledge-based methods to teach, and we still go right back into the old worksheets and kind of form. So because it's a popular education approach and because we're working in communities, what I train my teachers to do is respond intelligently to the variables existing in that place. So I can't tell you I'd share my curriculum approach with anybody, but you can't just read it any more than Keanu Reeves can do kung fu by having it put into his brain. It doesn't work that way. You actually
don't think
have to
that he could really do kung fu?
Some kind of kung fu. I don't know. Anyway, you can't just read the curriculum approach and just implement it. You have to actually practice actual skills of teaching and working, facilitating cross-culturally. If you are a Spanish speaker, as I am pretty good at, and you're with all Spanish speakers, I may employ Spanish in the classroom. because it's human to do that. I see somebody in front of me and I can say to them, your tie looks nice. I'm going to say, su corbata está bonito. I'm going to say that to them because it's inhuman to pretend that you can't. But if there's a Chinese speaker and a Spanish speaker in my class and I don't speak Chinese, I'm probably not going to use as much Spanish because it would be alienating to the Chinese speaker, somehow elevating that the Spanish speakers in that space instead of the Chinese speakers. So
it's like how to win friends and influence people. It's just basic kindergarten. This is how you sit next to someone and make friends with them. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have, I believe we have John on the phone. John?
Yes, hi.
Hi, John.
I want to come from the perspective of I earned a master's degree in German literature at a Midwestern university. And while I was there, I taught, I was called a TA, but I was really the teacher. And I taught each semester of German. And my perspective on this, and let me say this too,
sure.
I didn't learn German. I didn't start learning German until I was in seventh grade. I took 4 years in high school. I essentially learned the structure of German as an adult. And I'm very, I guess you could say I'm very conservative in my in the way that I see that it needs to happen. For instance, or well, just let me say, my understanding of English, like a noun, subject, direct object, indirect object, really traces to my learning of German, okay?
That's English where is Germanic, right? English is Germanic, so I think that would that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But also to know that when you're learning this as an adult, you need to know the structure of the grammar. You absolutely cannot fake it in a language that is very case-oriented like German. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think it's very important. First of all, I appreciate what you said earlier about how there are misconceptions about learning languages in the United States. I think people think it's a lot easier than it actually is. They see these programs that are you can order and you can listen to on, when you're flying on an airplane and you learn it in 30 days. That's garbage.
True.
And so my whole approach to it is that it's very rigorous and very demanding. And if you want to really, master a second language, you have to put in a lot of effort over a long period of time. And when you're doing this as an adult, you need to understand the structure of the language, the grammar, and there's no other way around it.
Well,
Thanks for calling in, John.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and I appreciate your credentials. And I'm not saying that it's going to ruin you to learn the structure, especially if you really like learning the structure. But second language acquisition theory doesn't support the idea that you need to learn. I'm just going to give one example, and I have this discussion all the time, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to invite people to call. It's easy to get in fights about this, really. I mean, so I don't really want to be that too provocative, but I will say that I hang out with a lot of people who speak English competently. They make a lot of mistakes. They make as many mistakes as I do in Spanish, but they don't have metalinguistic awareness in their own language. That is, they cannot analyze the structure of their own language. They may not be literate. They can't write in their own language, but they can speak English well enough to go to a job interview, you know,
a parent meeting, these things are important.
People are needing here. And so I'm not as interested in making sure that they're perfect. And a lot of times the folks that I get in arguments about with structural side is they're like, yes, but that person totally used the wrong article. And I'm like, well, I mean, fine, but they were able to have a conversation with a police officer that didn't land them in jail. And that's a big deal for their family. And that's what I'm interested in.
Thanks a lot. That is an interesting way of looking at it. I remember, when people look at literacy, just basic literacy, a lot of people think either you can read and write or you can't, but there's steps to it. Can you read a ballot and fill it out? Can you understand a prescription bottle? Or can you enroll your kids at school? There's different levels. That's so interesting what John brought up, though. And we do have another caller. We have Mike on the phone. Michael, what do you think?
Well, I've just got back into this country about 3 months ago. My wife and I have been out teaching English and French. She's a French teacher as well, from Mexico all the way to Vietnam. And
that sounds exciting.
Yeah, totally.
That sounds exciting.
Sounds like my former life.
It's been great. You know, I mostly kindergarten up through high school is the age group I've been in. And just beautiful. But we went through a formal school in Guadalajara, a TEFL school, for 1 month. And then once we got out into the field and started teaching, you find that you forget a lot of what they taught you, and you just work with the people with the particular culture that you're in. And it just happens. You know, you learn the basics, of course, for teaching, but then all of a sudden it just happens. And you understand the culture a little bit. You learn some words, et cetera, and it works really well. So the method that your guest is talking about, it just came naturally. So anyway.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael. I have to say, coming up this morning on KABU at 9 on Political Perspectives, local attorney Stephen Goldberg talks about being part of a recent delegation of lawyers and academics who visited Tunisia to support the revolution. At 9:30, host Carlos Chavez reports from a town hall to stop wage theft. That's going to be fantastic. Workers and other community members share their stories about the impact of wage theft and the movement to pass laws to protect workers. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the president of Physicians for Social Responsibility blasts the Japanese government for continuing to minimize the ongoing nuclear catastrophe. Dr. Carl Grossman talks about what you're not supposed to know about nuclear power. And the president of the National Organization of Women discusses the continuing battle for equal pay for equal work. At 11 on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen welcomes Matthew Shepard, senior conservation associate with the Xerxes Society. They're butterfly people, about their brand new book, Attracting Native Pollinators, plus the plant of the month. Guess what is the plant of the month?
I don't know.
Figs.
Figs.
Thanks, KABU members, for your support. If you're not a KABU member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm on the web and clicking on the tip jar at the top of the homepage. Patrick, this is a super cool conversation. We're talking about Patrick McDade's new company, People, Places, Things. He's got Voz Alta program in there. He's got Ampersand program in there. He's got Working People Spanish program in there. And we're just talking about people's ideas about how you teach English, how you learn another language. We had John calling up and saying, you know what? This is a rigorous thing, and you have to take it seriously. You have to really study the structure of a language. And then we had Michael calling up and saying, actually, you know, we just did that, and we kind of forgot what we learned in TOEFL school, and it was fine. But what I hear, Patrick, what I hear you saying is this issue about going into our neighborhoods and helping just local, new, transplanted residents just get their feet on the ground, really, as far as being able to communicate in English. And other people who want to learn Spanish or want to learn another language coming in and getting that, how do you say that?
Connection
with someone from the other side of the world a lot of the times. Do we have, the number to call is 503-231-8187. And Ralph has another question. Ralph, what is it this time now, Ralph? Ralph wants to know where he can go and hang out with people.
Yeah.
Huh, Ralph?
I know where to go, and that's Hillsborough Schools. It's a great place and fascinating. Yeah.
We're starting up a new program this week at Barnes Elementary in Cedar Hills, where our board op, Kate, is staying. But, yeah, out in the West County, or in Washington County, there's a lot going on out there.
Great. Here's my question.
Sure.
How do you approach the teaching of math? Language is one thing, and math is another. I've been helping with the math question, and which is a fascinating thing and certainly an important skill. So that was my question. How do you teach math?
I'm so stoked.
That's juicy.
I'm so stoked you asked that. It's really interesting. Here's one of the things that is an important part about the Voz Alta approach that we've got, is that language is never learned in a decontextualized way. So we always teach language. We do. Within the context of something else. And we do that through these modules. And we make a module which lasts for about a month, maybe about four classes, and we explore the language of a particular topic, a particular real-world topic. It might be the food handler's card. It might be the driver's license test. It might be dating in America. And it might be math. And it might be measurement. And it might be in the kitchen. So we'll bring in a recipe, and we'll explore that recipe with a few techniques. And folks get comfortable with the language that's there. Do they speak it perfectly? No. But we may have math as one of the things that we do. So I'll do something like dictate, okay, I'm going to say some numbers out. You write them down. Okay, 5, 20, 34, whatever, they're writing them down or yelling them back to me. And then once they're on the page, I'll say, okay, now multiply them. Multiply? I'll show them an example on the board. Oh, that's multiply. Okay, that's how we do it. And then maybe we'll make the activity a little harder. We'll say, now I'm going to yell out some numbers and multiply them in your head. Ready? Ready. 3 times 5, you know, and people are like, whoa, can I write that down, teacher? You know, but it becomes that the content is really a way to keep people engaged and move through these different areas of meaning in our psychological environment. I don't say that I'm teaching math. I say that I'm teaching English by looking at math or exploring math. I hope that helps. But I can't talk as much about how if my goal was to get a Russian speaker from the Ukraine and I wanted to get them to be able to pass the GED, that's not really the area that I work with.
Mm, that's really interesting. And I think we do have another caller. We also have Miriam on the phone. Miriam.
I wonder if it's my friend.
Germanstunde.
Yeah, Fundy Germanstunde. Yeah.
That show is awesome.
Huh. Oh, well, I love this show. This is a great show, Lisa. And hi, Patrick.
Hi.
So I speak 3 foreign languages. And when I lived overseas, nobody believed I was American because they said Americans don't speak any foreign languages.
Mm-hmm. Another stereotype about America that I'm going to kill.
Okay. Well, I have to chime in a little bit. You know, there's someone who was a German teacher who or had studied German who called in before.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with part of what he said. German is a very structural language, so you need to you really need to know the grammar. And I think basically in any language, I think you need a combination. You need to have studied the tenses and the endings and all of that, but you also need to use them. And what I find, and there's is of the I have the 3 languages I speak. I speak German, French, and Spanish. My Spanish is my weakest because I never had the fortunate opportunity to live in a Spanish-speaking country. And that makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that you can learn, you know, talking to people here and you know, studying, you know, what the pluperfect is and, mm-hmm. and all that. And I certainly agree with other callers who said that they learned about English grammar by studying a foreign language because English grammar is taught so poorly here. I mean, most Americans don't know what a subjunctive is.
Right. Exactly. But do they still speak English?
Of course.
Yes. That's all I'm saying, Miriam. That's all I'm saying is that the... It doesn't mean that it doesn't help, especially for learners like you. It's not that German is any more structural than any other language. It's kids in every language learn to use their language without metalinguistic awareness. I'm not saying it hurts you to study that, but learners like you, and actually me, because I'm a grammar dork too, but really like to study the structure of language, but it is not required to the degree that the vast majority of people think.
Well, let me stop you right there.
Sure.
2 things. One, many Americans do not use the subjunctive correctly because they learned it here and people don't use it correctly.
Do they speak English?
They do speak English.
It's bad, right? But
they don't use certain grammar tenses correctly. And 2, I think it's easier, that approach is easier when you're younger. I mean, I see it in my kids. I was not good about, you know, speaking German all the time, and they understand a lot of German, mm-hmm. but they always answer back in English. And you know, they have to, if they're really going to learn it, they're going to have to, you know, figure out what the accusative and the nominative and the dative tenses are. And I think as you get older, that combination of that is key because it's harder the older you are when you start a language to just pick it up.
I think some people have a gift for it. My husband, he's got an obsession over it. But Miriam, tell us about the Germanstunde, your show, and when is it, and when's the next time we can tune
in,
especially for John?
Well, I'd love to be able to tell you another date, but we don't have a set date,
oh.
So we float a lot. But if you go on KBOO and you put in DIE German, you'll get, you don't even have to write Stunde, you'll get all of our online stuff.
We had so you have podcasts and stuff.
Yeah, podcasts up online. We had a pretty interesting show about what it's like to be German and criticize Israel.
It was completely fascinating.
Awesome.
I think that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was. So we're working on another one, but anyway, I appreciate your support for the show, and this has been really fascinating to me as I love languages,
yeah,
so
me too.
As a language person. And I wish Americans, some statistic I saw showed that only 30% of Americans even have a passport,
mm-hmm.
you know, much less, you know, learning a language. And it's offered so late here. I mean, kids in Europe start language learning now in first grade in some schools in Germany.
And you know what? In this country, if you pay for your kids to go to a private school, they'll start learning it earlier, too. There's this interest. interesting political dynamic with that. But Miriam, it's always a pleasure to hear from you. Thanks a lot for
calling. Yeah, great show. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You know, I have to say, okay, so my husband, he's Leapin' Louie Lichtenstein. Mm-hmm. He's the most explosive Lithuanian Jewish cowboy ever to come out of Northeast Portland.
It's true. I've experienced it.
He does a comedy show. It's a comedy cowboy show. And he just left this morning for Italy. And he can do his show in about 6 different languages. But here's the thing that's interesting, and it maybe it touches a little bit on differentiating between what John and Miriam are saying and what you're saying. Mm-hmm. His show has a script, and he knows what he's going to say, you know. And so to translate that into certain languages, it's like you only need to know this teaspoon of the words and how they fit together. And the way he's put his show together over the years is really fun. I mean, the first thing he does to learn a language, and he speaks about 6 languages, but no, not fluently. Mm-hmm. And he probably crucifies the subjunctive a lot, but he reads comic books. So for him, he's looking for comedy language. So he lifts entire lines from comic books. But once we lived in Amsterdam, and he said, oh, God, oh, no, my new agent is telling people I can do my show in German. And I went, uh-oh, you're going to have to call him back and tell him no. And he just looked at me and smiled, and he pulled out German in 60 days. And he can do his show in German. He is probably going to be arrested, though, because he probably doesn't know enough German to talk his way away from a police officer.
And should that be required?
We do have another. We have Beth on the phone. Beth, what do you think?
I volunteer Thursdays and Fridays teaching English to senior citizens who have disabilities. They're from Argentina and Guatemala and Belize and Venezuela. And most of them have been in this country up to 13 and 14 years. And what English they do know is set in stone. And it's been very difficult.
Send them to me.
At times, like future tense and past tense is pretty difficult when you've just learned the one tense. The present tense of all your verbs. But the thing that we do at this place I volunteer is we teach them how to use the computer, how to make resumes, and then we try and find them jobs, and we do it. We're actually doing it.
That's great. So, Patrick, how can Beth hook up to your listserv so that maybe if she sees your discussions about the language learning piece, because it sounds like she's doing what you are talking about.
In a way, yeah.
So how can she hook up with that? Thanks for calling, Beth.
Thanks, Beth.
Sure.
www.pptpdx.com. People, places, things, PDX. pptpdx.com. So I wanted to get back to some of the programs that we have and, again, how we connect to some of the nonprofits, because that sort of highlights, again, what Beth was saying. One exciting thing that we're doing, Hacienda CDC is a large provider of services. It's a housing community development organization that works with Latinos almost exclusively, not exclusively. And we are designing a curriculum for their tamale vendors. They have they call micromercantes, small business Spanish-speaking small businesses, and they've got a group of like 8 women who make tamales and sell them at the farmer's market, and that's awesome. And over the last 5 years, they've been doing really, really well. They say they make more money from the white people than they do from their own communities, and that sort of stands to reason. And so this is one of those places where building a bridge across culturally can be really beneficial for both sides. So one of the tricks is they don't get all the things about the cultural things as well as the language things about, say, customer service. So if they had little recipe cards that said what the ingredients were, that might help. So we're going to work with them and figure out the challenges that they're experiencing in the farmer's market and figure out how to increase their sales that way. So it's going to be kind of English for specific purposes in the same way that Beth was talking about. She's doing it for job searching. A side note, by the way, most immigrants and refugees don't compete with English speakers in the labor market, so they don't really get jobs through resumes. They get them through referrals from other immigrants and refugees who are already working in a factory or working in a restaurant. Another common misconception about how immigrants and refugees find work: we spend all this time teaching them how to post a Craigslist ad or make their resume, when really all they need to do is connect to other immigrants and refugees who will say, "Hey, we got an opening over here at this hotel," and they're like, "Cool." And on referral, that's how they get it. But coming back to this, one great story that somebody told me, I think Nathan Teske over there told told me, hopefully I'm allowed to talk about this. I think I am. That there was a situation where one of their tamale vendors put out a dog bowl with water, and so all the people with their dogs at the farmer's market would come up to her, and she sold like five times as many tamales. Now, culturally speaking, for folks from Mexico, dogs are kind of dirty. So the other, you know, some of the other people were like, "Oh, you had a dog bowl. Why do you want dogs to come over to your place?" And after the day was done, it was pretty clear that there was a cultural misunderstanding. I'm not in there to tell them that you must speak English or that you have to put a dog bowl out. I'm just saying, if you do, you're going to sell five times as much. And that's where the bridge building happens there.
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay, so we're running out of show. Patrick, how can we support your business? What's the most important thing for us to know about how to speak and get along with the person sitting next to us who's from the other side of the world?
Is come and be a student in my program. It takes anywhere from 4 months to a year. We're totally flexible, and there are classes all over the place. You can volunteer. You can do a work study thing and help me out a little bit by sort of paying off your time in the program. www.pptpdx.com. Well, there's lots of interesting things going, and as we look at the new census numbers, 20% of American families don't speak English at home. We are looking at a changing view of what it means to what an American looks like. America's already changed, actually. We just haven't updated our ideas of what America's not an English speaking nation. It's primarily an English speaking nation, but not an English speaking nation. That's all we got to say.
All right. And this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. A podcast of this show will be posted on KBOO.fm. Look for it in the right-hand corner, right-hand side of the homepage under Recent Audio. Follow me on Twitter. I'm Lisa Loving on Twitter. Find out who our guests are going to be and get breaking news and information. And stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Thanks.